Greetings, everyone. Okay, would you say the prayer?
Sure.
Our dear kind Heavenly Father, we're thankful to be gathered together at another board meeting for Deer Springs Ranch. We're thankful for the opportunity to be out here and to be able to enjoy all that Thou has given us. We're thankful for this day, for the opportunity to be together as friends and fellow members. And we ask for their guidance while we're here and protection while we're here as well. We thank Thee, Father, for all that Thou has given us. And these things we ask in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Amen. All right. Roll call. I'm Brent. Larry Clarkson, 76.
Barry Clarkson, 173.
Mike McNichols, 270.
Dade, 83.
And Lynette, it's up to you.
193 and 37.
Shelley.
Woods, Sid and Shelley, 128.
Christina Logan, 51.
Javentino, 121.
Joan Smith, 269.
Dave Bruder, 129.
Brad Sammy, 239.
Chris Nielsen, 127.
So I don't know what my mom does, but it's 118. My name is Wesley Robertson. The owner is Paula.
Anybody else online?
Link for everyone
to know. Dirk Tyson.
Joe McElroy. Laurie and Steve Gothard. Bruce McQueen. Tom LeClaire and Matt Screen.
Perfect. I think that's it. That's everybody. All right, Barry, you're up on your meeting minutes for June.
The meeting minutes were prepared by me from June. I got input from members of the board as far as some corrections. They were sent out again yesterday for final review, but I didn't get any further clarifications or questions. Does anybody have any additions, clarifications, or questions?
I do not.
I do not.
All right. I make a motion that we adopt the minutes as written for the June meeting, and look for a second.
Second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth.
And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's it.
Okay. Is that it, Barry, for your minutes?
Yep. That's okay. It.
Mike, you're up.
Okay, treasurer's report. We have $140,000 in our checking account, savings accounts, the two accounts together, $21,911. We have about $8,388 in our annual meeting CD, which we still have to figure out what we're going to do with that. No plans have been agreed on yet. And then in the other CDs we have, which are basically excess savings that have not yet been committed to anything, we have $105,000. So everything looks good. The P&L up to this point in the year, everything's going normal and pretty much as expected. If anybody has any questions about anything on the P&L, now's the time. Go for it.
Cabin maintenance and supplies. The budget is $2,000, but it says we spent $4,327. Trying to
figure out where why there's a discrepancy or having so much more over budget. I'll have to go look at it and try to figure that out, and I'll get back to you. Okay. Yeah, I can't answer off the top of my head.
Crop management and erosion budget is $3,000 over $7,000.
I'll answer what I think it is, and then somebody can correct me. But Larry did a ton of work to correct a significant problem that we had with erosion behind the ranch house over here, that in the past, the erosion has been so bad that it was actually endangering the ranch house area. And if it was allowed to continue, it would have just gotten worse and worse over time. So Larry took the initiative to spend a whole lot of money and time and effort to fix that problem with the erosion. And I think that's the majority of it. But Larry,
I'm not sure if that's where that.
That is where we put the funds.
Paid out of that invoice.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
And then the roads, the contract services, and so again, Larry. The budget, well, the budget is only 14. We spent the 14. And then, but the roads only at 1400. So I don't know where, like, part of that road grading, and it didn't go, it went just to contract services, or...
If you'll remember from last year, we talked about how we didn't get built out a bunch of services, of contracted services. We were under budget last year that we plan to be over budget this year. So that could account for some of that.
Yeah, and I haven't been breaking it down into the actual hours he spends on the grader versus the hours he spends on the...
So it was average out.
The full budget should average out, and I'm trying to keep that in there. We really don't have... It's probably going to be more grading type projects to finish out the year, but it's not limited to that. But that's kind of my intention to line up that budget.
And I'm trying to pull up the cabin supply stuff when my computer went off. I had that previously, but I'll get you an answer on the cabin supply.
I was just going to bring up part of that too. May have come from the remodel on these two bathrooms.
That was a totally different line.
That might be a different line.
Yeah.
I say I know that we've put money into fire extinguisher, rat traps, and those sticky pads and.
I know we got some stuff, water heaters that haven't, like, been assigned. Into a cabin.
We did get the four water heaters, toilet paper, and paper towel. There's a bunch of that that's stocked up for the year. So I imagine
over
probably a lot of that.
Double the budget. I was just trying to figure out, where is that money going to come from?
Well, because the other part of the cabin maintenance budget is like $8,000 or $6,000 or something. Like that's a repair budget.
Yeah. So like water heaters and stuff, wouldn't those fall under like the repair budget, not the supplies part?
The repair budget?
Yeah.
What category is that? Like,
I didn't print the budget, but I don't know.
I'll get back to you.
Should be a different line item for like overall.
You know, every year, some categories are a little higher, a little bit lower, and at the end of the year, it typically all averages out for the positive.
Those are just numbers that stuck out to me, so I'm like,
I apologize because I've been up at cabin one. Normally, I would be home with internet access, and I haven't had internet access for the past week. So
nice, isn't it?
There are some advantages, but I will find out and I will get back to you. Okay. Any other questions on the P&L? Or finances in general for their niche. Things are looking very good. So next item that's related, in last month's board meeting, I wasn't here. Those of you who were here know I wasn't here. But in last month's meeting, it was stated that we had seven owners that were 2 years in arrears or more and were heading toward collections. So the good news is five of the seven, we received payments to get them out of that category, so they no longer need to be sent to collections. But we did have two owners that were 2 years or more in arrears that we have sent to collections. So that's a good news, bad news kind of scenario. There is a proposal. I would like, can you guys just take these and pass them around?
Thank you.
Just kind of passing through there. The board members have all seen this, but here's a copy for anybody that wants it.
I'll help you with the big words.
I am making a proposal that I want the board to vote on. So this, we're certainly open to member input, and that's why I'm passing this around so you guys can look at it for member input. But it's really just a decision that I want the board to make. And the proposal is to do essentially a feasibility study to determine if it's both affordable and desirable for us to create a permanent structure here at headquarters to house our fire engine that we purchased last year, to keep it safe and protected from the elements and from rodents and anything else. In conjunction with that, to possibly add some permanent rodent-proof storage for headquarters as well. It's important for us to have a place where we can put things that we can keep the rodents out. In fact, Jeff and Tina, I'll give them a shout-out because they have been working, spending their own time and effort to redo the storage closet that's right back here behind the store and the comfort stop. There's a closet back there that has been rodent infested for years, years and years. So we've never really had a place to be able to put things to keep them safe and rodent free. So they're already doing that for that closet back behind the comfort stop. Is it done or almost done? Or? Okay.
Other than some caulking, but.
Okay.
Get paint for the outside.
So again, that's just one of, you know, 100 things that these guys have done voluntarily, just like everybody else does so many things voluntarily. We really appreciate that. But back to the fire engine enclosure, the proposal basically is to either build a freestanding metal building from scratch, and we do have a ranch member who's in that business. We have a ranch owner who does commercial metal buildings and has offered to assist in terms of providing a discount or assistance in, you know, putting it together, putting it up. But we don't know numbers on that yet. The minimum size for the fire engine would be basically 16 feet wide. And how many feet deep would be minimum?
I'd say 30. I was going to say 32 feet.
32 to so. So our thought process is one of the options is to just do a freestanding building that is at least the minimum of 16 wide, 32 deep. I would recommend doing a little bit bigger than we actually minimum need, so probably 20 feet by 40 feet. And it's also more of a standard size, so probably a better pricing. The other option, many of you are familiar with putting two containers on each side and then building the wall in the front and the back and a roof over the top. So another option would be put two 40-foot containers down, pour a concrete pad in between them, do the front wall and the back wall as another option. And then you get into, do we only want one roll-up door on the front where you go, you know, pull out and have to back in, or do we want a roll-up door on the front and the back where you can actually drive around the back and pull in forward? But the proposal is to look at the area right over there just west of the J station. So it would be near water. It would be a freestanding independent facility that would protect the fire engine and allow us to do some other things. And obviously with the eye in the future of having something like a volunteer fire department where people can be trained and available to use the equipment and knowledgeable about using the equipment in the event we need to use it. Now, just to be clear, we've talked about this before. The intent is not to have a fire department that's going to be able to, you know, put out a cabin fire up in Crawford Canyon. You know, the intent is really to have something here that's available and accessible to protect the lower cabins and the ranch house and this general area. And possibly put out brush fires or whatever else, you know, might be possible. It's really not intended to provide fire protection for all the structures on the whole ranch. So I just want to be clear about what the intent is. So at this point, I'm just making a proposal to do the feasibility study. Find out, okay, this option would cost X and the other option would cost X. And the ranch member who volunteered time and effort to participate, what does that really mean? Does that mean a discount on the building? Does it mean a discount on the manpower to come build the building? So I want to just try to nail all those facts down and come up with some very specific options for the board to consider for the future.
Mike,
okay, so just one clarification.
Yes, go ahead.
Are you planning on doing the feasibility study, or how's that
actually? I'm going to facilitate it. I would do it personally.
There's no cost to it, and you're personally doing the facility and bringing it back to the board.
Correct.
Thanks.
Dirk?
Mike, I support that for sure. But I would also like to add that we at least ask the question if there are other pieces of equipment, ranch assets that should be included if we build a structure, because it will be a lot cheaper for us to build one larger structure than multiple smaller structures.
That's a great point. So we're talking not just fire engine, but maybe the grader or the whatever. So,
right. Okay.
Well, as long as you're looking into it, wouldn't it make sense to have a building that could also act as a pavilion for indoor meetings when it's raining and that kind of stuff? We pull the equipment out and we have some space to meet when it's too hot.
That would be a dual purpose facility.
And in doing that, and we talked about doing something like that here in the well field as well as a couple of other places. Yeah. But as long as we're building a building, we might as well have it so that it can be used for meetings and reunions. We've talked about a pavilion. I don't think a pavilion makes sense of just having a roof. But since if we're going to build the building, then it would allow for indoor meeting as necessary. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it would be easy to build a building that had some enclosed space, but some open but covered space too.
Sorry, Tina, I didn't catch what you said.
The building where they're talking about is too far for the internet.
Well, just for me personally, I would avoid building down here because of the wash and because it gets smaller and smaller every year, although nobody notices because it's over such a period of time. I would rather see it up here in on this side of the ranch house. But my opinions were,
where are you saying?
Oh, just
on the other side of the ranch house?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's bottom of the well field.
Well, part of my thought process is to get member input on all this kind of stuff, because this is all exactly what we need, is to get member input. Hey, well, I know somebody who knows something, or, hey, what about making it bigger to do more things? That's exactly what I'm talking about.
We need this to support all the grills.
What would be the opposition of tearing down that and putting it there?
Again, I think all the options need to be presented.
Will there be a lot of backlash?
Okay, so we could talk about this for an hour. I don't want to do that. I want to propose that the board authorize me to initiate a feasibility study to solicit from owners to come up with multiple options and the associated expenses necessary to make those options invalid.
I move that motion.
That is my motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? There you go.
Got it. Thank you.
It doesn't raise one quick question, though. Are we starting up the fire engine periodically? Is this still at your place?
It's alive. You just drove it up. It's on the horn, Chris.
You should have had the sirens on when it came
in. So, let me say this. You people that are here are the ones who care, okay? The people that are not here, I'm not saying they don't care. I'm saying, and I'm including the people on the Zoom meeting, so you're here in terms of what I'm talking about right now. So anybody that's listening, anybody that wants to send me information or recommendations or suggestions, please do so. So I don't have to send out an email asking for it. Just send it.
We're going to put it in the minutes, too, to see if anybody's reading.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. There you go.
Who's
okay,
speaking?
Okay,
yes,
I'm not done yet.
We know who to send it to.
I'm sorry, Mike. This is Mike McNichols. Is this Lori?
Yeah, this was Lori and Steve.
Hi, Lori and Steve. I thought I recognized your voice. Yeah, you can just drop it by, and we'll have lunch in my backyard again.
Hey, Mike, this is Ben Collinwood, Lot 227. You and I spoke before. I'd love to chat with you about possibly putting solar panels on that. We can have the price of that structure for you.
Absolutely. That's a great suggestion. Thank you. Okay, and my email and contact information is on the website because I'm on the board. So if you want to find out what my contact information is, just look on the website.
Thank you.
Okay, one final comment from me. My family and I have found and relocated two rattlesnakes in the last 2 days. So 2 days ago, we found one in the, well, my grandson found one in the store. He walked up to the table to look at a knife, and there was a rattlesnake 12 inches away from his foot as he's standing there. So I think that's the first time we've ever had a rattlesnake inside the store. And then we went to Bryce yesterday. We got home from Bryce at about 7 o'clock last night. And my oldest brother went to go use the outside hose bib to get water for the dogs. And he was about 12 inches away from the corner of the house and the hose bib and saw a rattlesnake right there. So two in the last 2 days. So I'm just putting that out there so everybody knows this is the season. They're here. Be careful. Okay. So that's it.
Every time we come up, youngest son will kill a rattlesnake. And the last time we were up, it ended up being a Mojave Green. And they're more deadly than anything else because we always had snake for dinner, but he skins it and he dries them, and this snake was green as it could be, this rattlesnake. So that's even more warning.
Right. Well, I know some people are opposed to killing them, and I've done both in the past. I've killed them when it was necessary, and I've relocated them. The last two days were both relocated. So okay, I'm done, and we want to be efficient. Oh, go ahead, Chris.
I just wanted to add that as far as rattlesnakes go, you got to be careful about putting something out there about killing snakes because it's illegal now.
Yeah.
And we've all done it. But this is being recorded, and you got to be careful because some people will get upset. So we should talk about it and protecting them, protecting our families as necessary, and there we go. That should be it.
All right. I'm done. Okay.
It does draw negative attention if it gets out. That's why I'm saying.
Property manager report, Cody. Make sure you talk about the trash trailer.
Don't use the trash trailer.
No, don't use it improperly.
Yeah. I just prefer nobody ever use the thing. So. So it is just for cabin use, and it actually has been a little better having it over there. I actually haven't looked at it since I got back. I just got back this morning, so.
I've been looking at it every single day you were gone. Twice a day.
It seems to be doing better over there, so. All of the cabins are occupied, aside from six right now. So the occupancy's been pretty steady and good. Haven't had a bunch of problems as far as maintenance goes with cabins. I think cabin one I was going to bring up needs probably a toilet.
It does. I was going to talk. We'll talk about that offline, but it definitely needs a new toilet.
We'll chat about that a little bit more later. But I did get the gate valve on the J station replaced, so people aren't using the stop and waste to turn that off and on as they get water and need water there. And the lawnmower that was over here, I took the carburetor apart on that and cleaned that out really well a few times and got that running. So I was able to use that for some of this stuff here, which was nice, save some time. Change the oil as well, the filter and oil and all that stuff on that. The Range Rover also got that cleaned up and running, and I'm going to try to use that more going to the, you know, back and forth on these upper cabins. Try to save some fuel, I guess, a little bit on that. Barbecues. Cade brought down 3 barbecues. I guess donated those to the ranch that were needed really badly. I think there's probably 1 or 2 more that could be replaced, but I think with those 3, we have at least all of them functioning and working. Barbecues on all the cabins. So, I think that's it. Oh, I did put light switches inside the bathroom.
Yeah, we noticed that. That's a nice touch. Thank you. That's very nice.
Ended on that. That was great. Grant, really, if you don't have anything else, I think that was about what I had to cover.
So, I'm sorry.
If you don't have anything else, I think that's all I had to cover. Well, really, on
I had stuff. One question for you. Fuel. The other thing I noticed on the money thing was fuel costs were fairly far down. I don't think we filled the tank.
We filled them last year. I am not sure how much is left in them. I can figure out and see, but I was actually going to chat with Brandon. I'll talk to him later because I think the fuel coming out of here just smells like old fuel. And
out of the gasoline tank.
I'm just wondering if it'd be better to do fuel more often, because the stuff that's in there has been in there for probably, I don't know, 6+ months. And if it'd be better to do, I don't know. We can talk later, I guess, about that.
No, I actually think it would probably be better to.
But we probably
with the amount of fuel we're using, I think it'd be better to do it more frequently. And then there was, you know, other people can get filled up when they come out, so they won't just have to come out for the pier.
Right.
There's several people who have tanks. And
I'm just going to interject. I looked at the cabin supplies budget. We did spend over $1,000 on those water heaters that could be allocated when I find out where they're being put. I think $2,000 was really only to cover like consumables, so paper towels and that kind of stuff. But there's a lot of, we did like door screens, we did a lot of rat traps, we did a lot of different things that really shouldn't. I mean, $2,000 was too low. I think what you're talking about, Jeff, is there's $2,000 set aside for supplies, but overall cabin expenses is set at $12,000, and we're at like $8,000. So halfway through the year, that's not terrible. So the $2,000 really doesn't matter as long as the overall category is within budget, and we are. I think just the $2,000 was not realistic for this year.
Right. Because the way it's listed is supplies, right? So when we see that, we're like, holy moly, that's a lot of toilet paper.
But if you look at the bottom overall category where it is being totaled, that's the one that matters.
And I also want to interject that I'm staying in cabin number one right now. And in the past, when I've stayed in cabins, I've literally had to come down here and get extra toilet paper. When we checked in, there is extra everything right now. So there is
a crap ton of toilet paper.
There is
almost regularly. I'm putting in
a crap load.
I think there's been more orders this year. I think they're doing a better job at keeping everything stocked instead of being like, oh, shoot, we're out.
So because it's on the P&L doesn't mean it's gone. A lot of that has been to purchase supplies that are still sitting there in the cabins that were not there necessarily in the past.
I get that part. It just was kind of...
Yeah.
Like if you stick a water heater, so if you stick a repair item into a supplies list,
we don't have a repair list. It's all supplies. It's all cabin expense.
So until it's allocated for, like, the cabin 10 one, you put it under the cabin 10.
Yes.
But until that, it's in the
main. But if it's general supplies, like, we're not going to track where toilet paper goes. That is for overall cabins.
So we don't have a separation between what is supplies, say, toilet paper, versus repairs, say, water heater. We should correct that.
One more thing on toilet paper. We have soaps to keep it rodent-proof over your stocking.
So for the most part, the toilet paper is stored in a conex, and that is rodent-proof. I don't have problems. But in the cabins, they're not in totes. A lot of them are in just cabinets.
Is it protected?
I know I have had, actually, I think, did you... Kate stayed in one of the cabins where rodents had gotten into the toilet paper. I honestly haven't had a lot of problems with that. I think, Kate, that was probably one of the first ones that got brought up.
Maybe we should invest in smaller totes under the sink for that.
It's a good suggestion. Yeah. If it's a problem.
We're over budget right now.
Come on.
Well, not if you look at the bottom line item.
Okay. All right. We've got a lot to cover, so let's move on.
All right, that's it. All right, Dirk, you're up. I'll just tell them about the sampling stations. All the sampling stations are in. Tina took a routine sample off sampling station one and took an investigative sample on sampling station two, and everything passed. And so the sampling stations are in, so we're going to start rotating them for our rotating the sampling stations for our tests.
So, Brent, no more sampling out of the cabins, and everything's going off of the.
There's really no need to. I can send you an EPA.
I just wanted to clarify that that's what we're doing. No more sampling.
The only sampling out of the cabins will be at the upper cabins.
And to clarify, they're numbered from the 40,000-gallon tank down to here, so it's 1, 2, 3, 4 is behind.
Four is behind there, Three's up by the 6, 7, and 8. Two's by the Scutum Pavol, and one's by the 40,000-gallon tank. They're all right off the main line, was where, and that's where they want you to test off. So, Brooke, did you have anything to add?
Not on the water. I appreciate the efforts that have been done, and I think you've now given everything to Bart so he can prepare a new map for the state sampling program, right?
Correct.
And so I think we're in great shape. It's good to see the investigative samples all came back with good results. And so the other thing I wanted to talk about, well-filled irrigation. So I met with the Ballards to try to move forward with the getting the well-filled irrigated at least somewhat this year. I think they met with you a little bit, or Kevin did with you, Brent, to discuss some of that. And I met with them after that to talk to them about what the criteria would be so that we could show some evidence of irrigation so that we could basically apply for NRCS funds to improve the irrigation. Because essentially, NRCS won't give us funds to take a non-irrigated space and make it irrigated, but they will give us funds if we can show an irrigated space to make it an improved or more efficient irrigated space. And so the biggest drawback that we have temporarily is that we would be needing to use the generator in order to pump water to be able to do some irrigation. We probably won't worry about pumping enough to make it a very productive field, but to show evidence that we have done such with the NRCS grant, we're hoping to get a solar system power source that would be capable of running the irrigation field and moving that forward. The Ballards are looking into bringing in a used wheel line in order to try to improve the efficiency over the hand lines that were originally in the field. I have found out there isn't any distribution line that we could put risers on. So in the meantime, we're going to have to probably look at doing something where we run a line east to west across the field and try to, you know, run hand lines or wheel lines north and south off of some type of a center connection there. And Larry, before you leave, I'd like to hopefully spend a little bit of time understanding what kind of infrastructure is in place so that you could switch and pressurize water into some type of a riser head that could have wheel lines connected to it. And that's all I have as far as an update on that.
And that water use will also help us with the with continuing or demonstrating use for the for the water rights as well, right?
Yeah, the water right showing evidence that we're using it will be very helpful.
So, Dirk, do you have any timelines for that? I mean, I know we're trying to get the will. We got to get stuff done maybe before Larry leaves. High level, what are your timelines to or goals to try and get that done?
I don't have a timeline commitment from Ballards, but, you know, we could do something as late as September, but hopefully we could do something before that.
So kind of just the order of operations would be to try and get the source before Larry leaves, and then maybe the sprinklers before September.
Yeah.
One more thing on your plate, Larry.
Mm-hmm. That might become a Brent thing.
Yeah, because he has nothing on his plate.
All right, is that it, Dirk?
Yes, sir.
All right. Is Ben on?
Yes. Sorry, just trying to get to the mute button.
Yes, I'm here.
You got two Bens.
We just need an update on our signs.
Yeah. Ben Clarkson on the signs. What do you have to tell us?
Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Signs are not installed. I made some progress, but I may need to have some help as far as getting up there and digging and putting them in. But that's the update.
Okay. Thanks. Do you have the posts?
Yeah, I've been building posts to metal posts that could be dug in and then, you know, self-tap or screw and mount them too, but I didn't have enough. I was, you know, putting some together so they all look good and get them, to length. And I've tried to, you know, screw them down, but then moving them, they're going to have to be kind of disassembled. So I've got everything, but from now on, it's better just to go up and get them hammered in the ground. If some of the places would allow that, others dig a post hole and put some concrete around it. But I should have all the signs and all the metal posts now to go and
Are they mounting on one post per sign or two posts on each side of the sign? How many holes do you need at each post sign location?
Two vertical posts on either side.
Okay.
So you've got all the parts and pieces. I'm coming out on the 24th. Do you want me to pick them up from you and bring them out at least so they're at least here? And then maybe we can get some volunteers to put them out.
Any direction that way. I just don't want to, move them two or three times and scratch them up or whatever. But they are, big enough. I can't stack and put all of them in my truck or anywhere. I would check with me and see if I can't get out there or something before then. But it's kind of going to be a day project just to go around and dig holes and put them in one time and see, how one goes in, if it's going to work. Because they are bigger, and I want them secure enough they're not leaning with the wind after the first 2 weeks.
How big are your posts?
2.5-inch diameter, just metal, galvanized metal poles.
Because I got an auger on my machine, and I got different size. If I know ahead of time, I could bring the right size, and I could drill them.
Yeah, who's speaking?
Is it
Chris?
Chris Nielsen.
Okay.
You have a 4-inch auger?
I have a 4, 6.
That'd
be
probably the easiest, just to punch a couple holes and just drop them in.
Yeah.
So you're saying they're not going to fit in your truck. How much do they need to be pulled out on a trailer, or what are we?
No. They'll fit in my truck, but just not assembled, just to put everything in there. And, one truck will haul the stuff easy enough, but then they'll, assemble on site without having to, again, the main thing is to not scratch up these aluminum signs or move a number of times. So I just soon, have them go up or take them up on a day when we're going to start going to first site and try to put them in. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay, well, we'll coordinate.
I think it'll be helpful, if whoever spoke, has an auger. Larry had offered. Part of it is just running a piece of equipment from the east side of the ranch to the west side of the ranch, and in between still takes some time. Yeah.
But if we knew that the holes were dug, then we could easily bring the signs up and fill everything in. And
absolutely. I'll look at that and measure, because where the holes are pre-drilled in the sign are not right at the outside. But I could say, hey, we just need two holes, 3 foot on center or whatever, kind of diagonal to the road, and somebody else's judgment to at least drill them if they're a little bit off isn't a big deal. If we're going to mix a little mud there on site and dump in it, I want to try some of these to hammer the metal pole flat on the end and drive them into the ground with a pulse pole pounder. But that'll be, you know, some of the dirt, it definitely would take it down 2 feet deep and make it the most stable without even disturbing and drilling a hole.
Can you guys use some of that plastic foam expand a post hole? Is that expensive per hole?
That's what $15, and it does,
one hole.
One hole, basically.
We have the post banger for most of
them. That's too hard. It, I hate it. Need a hydraulic one to just
hydraulic pounder.
Yeah. You got one of those, Chris, on your machine?
I priced a lot this year. They're a little pricey, and I should do a pension full time.
Well, and it's hard to drive a steel post out here, even with a hydraulic pounder. You end up just wadding them up. Accordion or bending, blowing out. It's much better even if you just bring a little generator and a rotor hammer drill, like on my big Bosch concrete breaker rotor hammer, and a 2-inch, 3-inch drill, and drill a hole is almost faster and easier than moving a machine in a post hole.
That's what I want to try. I mean, I have a couple that, just go off a Dewalt cordless drill that if you just drill and pick away at it and keep pulling it up out, you can get down 18 inches or whatever. And if the soil's solid, it's not going to move or pull out. But it's just an on-site test case, and I have not got everything to go up there for a day. I may just need to take one and test it or something.
I'm going to be gone, but I have that big Bosch rotor hammer, and I think the biggest drill I've got is probably I might have a 2.5.
I've seen, I don't know what size there, but little 2-inch augers for things like that.
Yeah, you can buy. Home Depot has a whole range of all sizes. I just never have drilled. Usually, I start getting into diamond core to drill out to put in sewer lines in basements. I've got a 3-inch and a 4-inch. But that's for core drilling. You can't drill a hole in the ground with those.
Right.
I need somebody to blow up the tree. You just need so many holes, right?
One right tool.
Okay. Just coordinate that. Let's see what we can get done. If you need help, let us know.
Okay.
Is that it?
I think so.
All right. We're moving on to the waiver for the 214th time. We're going to do this in a I had an ABC sanctions, cabin waiver replacement, and removal of rule and regulation 4.02. But we're going to start with
going backwards.
We're going to do it backwards. Yeah. So, Cade.
Okay. So, one of the options with all the penalties and et cetera that way that I'd like to propose and make. So I'm making a motion that we, rather than try and enforce the annual requirement, that we would just remove Section 4.02 from the current rules and regulations. By doing so, that would still leave the requirement to sign the waiver for cabin rentals, and it would not change any of the verbiage, et cetera, on the waiver. So put that out as an motion and see if any board members would be willing to second that motion.
I'll second your motion.
Okay.
All in favor?
In favor?
No.
All opposed?
Aye. No.
Okay.
Dirk, I didn't hear from you or Ben.
Okay, one more time, say the motion.
The motion is to eliminate Rule 4.02, which is the blanket waiver, and take it out of the rules.
Okay, I vote nay.
All right. Ben, you got a vote?
Ben says he votes nay, but he can't. I don't know if he's on mute.
You just typed it?
No. All right.
I vote nay.
All right. All right.
Okay, we're going to move on to the cabin waiver replacement, and we're just going to...
Everybody voted nay.
Everybody voted nay except Cade. All right, next.
Okay, we're ready? Okay, we're gonna simply take a vote on the removal of the waiver and replacement with the waiver that was provided. I'll make the motion. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
All in favor? All opposed?
Nay.
No.
Nay.
Nay for Dirk.
Nay for Ben.
Just to be clear, that was a waiver verbiage change that Tina proposed and sent to the board.
And that was included in the emailing for everyone so they could read it.
Correct.
Okay.
Maybe just 1 second or 30 second point of clarification. I appreciate Tina putting that out, and I'd encourage anybody to put out stuff if you have ideas. The reason I personally vote nay is it doesn't contain what would be legally required to be of any use. So it takes away something we're already arguing about and puts in something that doesn't accomplish what we need to accomplish anyway. So.
Well, I proposed it because if there's no penalties on the waiver that's currently in place, that means people that do not want to sign it can't rent a cabin, and that's not right. People should be able to rent a cabin without signing the waiver.
Blanket waiver.
And as long as they agree that they acknowledge that there's these dangers and things with the cabins, there should be no reason they can't have it.
And we appreciate your input. The document you put together was pretty good. But I think for me and what – is it my turn?
Oh, yeah, it's your turn.
I think as we've talked from time to time, the committee and the waiver may be modified from time to time. I'm not ready to open that can of worms again at this point. I'm going to make a motion, and then I'm going to talk after the motion, after the vote, depending on how it goes, on what happens after. But my motion is that we adopt a new set of penalties or fines for non-compliance with the rules, and that applies to all the rules, including the cabin waiver. And it basically is that any violation of the rules results in a fine or a penalty equal to 10% of the annual assessment, which is right now would be a $50 fine for non-compliance with the rules, whether you're building a fire outside a fire pit or whether you're breaking, shooting firearms somewhere else. The reason this is coming up is because the statute changed, and now we have to have a written set of fines or penalties if we want them to be enforceable. So we, Kate produced a list of all the existing penalties that we have, and they're very few, but we have a lot of rules that don't have an enforcement mechanism. So my proposal is that there be a penalty or a fine of 10% of the annual assessment for non-compliance with the rule, plus the cost of damage. So if you build a fire outside of a fire pit and you burn down a cabin, it's not just $50. It's $50 plus what it takes to fix. If we eventually adopt a rule related to garbage trailer use, then it'll be $50 plus whatever it costs to clean up the mess. With that being said, it escalates, as most rules do, with repeat non-compliance. So if you break if the same owner breaks the same rule, then the penalty doubles each time that there's a repeat offense. I propose that it be effective beginning at the end of this year, because we're into this already. We have the waivers that we have signed so far. We have to have some time to implement this. But my motion is to add a fine or penalty for non-compliance with the rules in general, equal to 10% of the annual assessment, with that fine doubling each time there's a repeat offense. So just for those of you like me that are slow at math, if you violate the rule this year, it's $50. If you violate the rule next year, the same rule next year, then it's $100. And the year after that, now we are capped by statute of $500 a month. I don't think we're ever going to get there, but there is a statute that says you're capped at $500 a month, and we certainly will comply with that. I hope this doesn't become an issue. I know people feel very strongly about it, but believe it or not, I believe that all the board members are doing the best they can to try to figure out the best way to handle this moving forward. So that's my motion.
A point of clarification, because we, as you mentioned, we do have some fines already established. So this would be for where a fine is not currently in the rules and regulations.
Unless otherwise designated in the rules, this is the catch-all.
So I'm trying to understand. Okay, so the waiver rule being an annual requirement to sign it, so that fine would come in every calendar year. But if
the second time it would be $100.
The second time it's going to double. The third time it's going to double. So on and so forth. But when it's something like a fire pit outside a cabin, that fine happens any time that happens.
Yeah, if you build a fire today and we clean it up and you build another fire next month, that's going to be a whole – it's not by year. The waiver issue is an annual requirement, so it, the assessment on that penalty would be annually. But if you're out, you know, shooting a gun somewhere on the airstrip, which is not a designated area, today, and you catch it tomorrow doing the same thing, which this is hopefully never going to happen, but then there would be separate penalties for each of those occurrences or repeat offenses.
And so are you working on a mechanism to make sure that the violation is indeed justified? So let's say one member who doesn't like another member says, hey, I seen Jeff out shooting. You guys are coming after me for the fine, or are you going to have a mechanism to verify that that's accurate and
I'm
was breaking the rule?
Yes.
The statute actually requires that we give you notice of the fine and that you have an opportunity to appeal the fine. So that's all outlined by statute related to the fines related to that.
Yes.
But, we're all going to be having to be reported by other members, tattletaling about somebody else, and it's all going to be a hearsay. So the policing mechanism is basically,
we don't have a lot of instances of it again, but we have had a couple of instances like the fires. So we know who the person was that was staying in the cabin when the fire was done. So again, back to Barry's point, I don't think we're going to be running around being, unless we get some crazy members that are wanting to be ranch police. We're not running around policing everybody, but if it causes a problem, we can identify it.
But the offense will have to be verified. It's not just somebody reported it, so we're issuing a fine. It has to be decided on by the board, and there is an appeal process spelled out in the statute. So, anyway, I make my motion again.
I'll second the motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Derek, aye.
Any opposed?
I'm opposed.
I know. I think we should have done more talking about that. I'm not against the fines for abuse, but I think some of these things could be accidents versus abuse. And even though you're going to have people testifying because they've seen something, that doesn't mean they see things accurately. Our cabins are quite far from each other. Even shooting, I have a problem with us not even having shooting in areas up here. And I know people live here and you have to be careful about that. We have to have signed areas like where I live. I have BLM right next to me. I can go down there and shoot just fine. But how does somebody that doesn't pay attention to the boundaries, guys who didn't see me shooting on BLM, which is right below my cabin, and they call and turn me?
That's where the warning comes in that's provided in the statute.
And you can respond to that, but still it's one person against another person.
Well, in that circumstance,
I think a fine is okay, but the multiplying them. I mean, I don't build fires ever. All the years I've been up here, I built maybe three to burn stuff off at my cabin. That's it. And I do it. I try to do it late in the fall.
Well, just to be clear, the rules right now do not affect anybody's personal lot. The rules affect the common area. So
correct.
In your situation, if somebody did call up whoever, I don't know who they're going to report to, the ranch manager or eventually gets back to the board, that Chris was shooting a gun, you're going to probably get a phone call to say, hey, it was reported you were shooting a gun. You're not going to get a bill in the mail saying you owe $50 because you broke the rule. Yeah. Somebody's going to call you and say, it was reported that you were shooting. Were you on your lot? Because you can shoot all you want on your lot. Were you on the BLM? You can shoot all you want on the BLM. If you go, well, yeah, I was on the airstrip. Obviously, that's not BLM. And that's not your lot. That's not where you should shoot, Chris. We're going to have to give you a fine. So I don't think we need to keep making...
What about fires?
That's
because accidents happen at camp fires, cabins all the time.
Well, right now, there's...
If it lights the mountain on fire, they're going to be charging them for the damage.
They would be charged because right now there are no fires, zero fires, anywhere. Even on your private lot, on BLM, on association ground, anywhere on planet Earth, according to Deer Springs Ranch, there are no fires allowed. So if you accidentally start a fire...
We don't have any fire.
No.
I mean, I know we're in a bad drought, but I mean, if it gets better, would that change? It's across the board.
So, again, this is where it becomes important to be familiar with the rules and regulations on the ranch. So the rules and regulations don't...
Where do we find the rules and regulations?
They're posted on the website, so you can get a copy of the rules and regulations there. But we're not dictating... We're dictating on the common areas, right? So there's only two designated fire pits in the common areas that have fires. And right now we're not allowing those because of the current fire restrictions.
Yeah.
If fire restrictions are lapsed, they can come and deal. But what we're having happen is people are going out right in front of the cabin, putting a bunch of rocks around and building a fire. That's not allowed per the rules, and that's where there would be a fine. So again, hopefully you've elected board members that are going to be judicious and not be punishable going after you guys. We got an election coming up. Let's get a good election.
So I have one. We were in cabin two. This is quite a while ago. We're having a barbecue. That's different than a fire. But something was wrong with the hose, and it shot outside and lit on fire going out towards the forest. So I was lucky. I was able to get in there even though it was hot. I burned my hair off my arm and I shut it off. I told the people that were managing the ranch at the time, but if that takes off and burns the whole area, how do you know?
Well, again, there's accidents, right?
There's difference between
the multiple fines. That's good, but I think maybe for now you ought to do one fine, see how it goes, and then if we need it, that may be implemented. I don't think you should just go out there and start at the top and work your way backwards. You can't go backwards.
Well, actually, we can, and I think that's one of Barry's next discussions.
Let me clarify. That's all right. Go ahead.
We appreciate it, Chris.
And we all have kids, and kids sometimes do things that we don't want them to do, and that's something that should be talked about as well, because just because they go start a fire doesn't mean you need to do about it.
I just want to clarify my no vote. So I'm not opposed to all penalties. I think there are lots of penalties that are appropriate and justified and should be imposed, including the ones that are already in existence on the books. The reason I'm opposed to the blanket proposal for penalties is specific to the annual waiver requirement, because we already have a waiver included in the CCNRs for the ranch, which protects the ranch. The new waiver is more detailed and more specific and provides better protection for the ranch, which is a good thing. And I think all owners should sign it and should be encouraged to sign it. But my concern is I don't want to start penalizing people who, for whatever reason, have chosen not to sign that waiver as it exists, and then start penalizing them and basically saying, you know, you have to sign it as a condition of living at the ranch. We've had at least one member that I know of say, well, I'll sign it, but only if I can make changes to it. It's like, so where does that stop? You know, so we have lots of different opinions, lots of different perceptions. So again, I'm not opposed to all penalties. And in fact, I think there should be penalties for people who break the rules, and especially if they break them multiple times. But I don't think somebody should incur a penalty if for whatever personal reason they choose not to sign the new annual waiver. So I just wanted to clarify my position.
So since now a penalty, if you will, has been attached to violating the waiver, I'm going to give you my formal request to hold a special meeting of the members for a disapproval to remove that rule 4.02 from the rules. There was a Deer Springs Ranch Facebook poll done, and there's 36 people who voted in favor of holding a special meeting of the members, and only one thus far that is against it.
That's my explanation. So if we're done with the discussion.
I'm done.
So what this means is, by statute, then now that the rule has been adopted, adding a penalty or fine for noncompliance with the rules, you have, by statute, the members have 60 days to have a meeting and hold a vote. And I want to clarify, just so we're not going, and I encourage you to, I think it's great. And if there's a 51% vote, or 50 plus 0.01, if there's more than a 50% vote of the members, now that includes all 305 lots, if you have members vote to reject or to remove that rule, then it's removed. So you have, as members, so a lot of people said, well, we should have a member vote. Now's your opportunity. Now, that is a member process. The members can call that meeting or how handle that. However, you have to verify who the owners are and that they're in good standing to vote. But if you get a vote of whatever the total is, I think it's 152 lots.
No, it's less than that. Because it's the voting interest.
It's, how many do we have that vote, Danielle? Is it 300?
No.
2 minus 6.
Well, there's 305 minus lots
eight.
Total.
Minus 8.
Minus 8. So 297. Divide that in half, and as long as you're above the 50% line, then the rule goes away. And I think that if you, that is your right. Now's the opportunity for the members to step up and vote. And as long as we can verify that they did vote and that they are owners, great. This is now the time for you guys to step up. Now, with that being said, 60 days runs 3 days before the annual meeting. I discussed with the board, as long as that meeting or vote is taken before the annual meeting, we don't care that it's 3 days over. I'm not trying to discourage anybody from voting. I'm not trying to not count votes. I'm not trying to hinder this process in any way. So we'll give up until the day of the annual meeting. If you can gather that vote, then in the annual meeting, we'll acknowledge that that rule disappeared and it is no longer in effect. That makes sense?
So then since I'm the one formally requesting it, am I going to be given access to the members' contact information?
The answer is yes and no. If you produce something that, as you know, we don't hand out the member lists and contact information, but if you produce a document and provide it to Danielle saying, I want this sent out to all the members, it will go out. Okay. If you want it mailed out, then we'll make sure it gets mailed out. Whether physical or email, will assist, or again, we're not trying to stand in the way, but this is an action by members. So board members may participate as members in that meeting. They may not. I'm not going to, but you have the freedom to do, and we'll assist in any way to make sure that is a legitimate vote and the word gets out. Dan?
There needs to be a formal process for calling this meeting that is exactly analogous to the process of calling the annual meeting, which is also a member meeting.
Right.
So that means that there are paper ballots mailed out to every member.
Amy, this is helpful because this is one that
of the ballots that are returned to make sure that those people, those lots are eligible.
Well, I'm going to correct you on one thing, Dan, and I don't want to step on your toes, but in the bylaws,
and that's what she's going to
provided,
work on.
I haven't looked at it in a while. There is this option of electronic voting.
Esther and Chandler,
but you're right. Hey Ben, you need to mute for a second.
Yeah, please mute.
As long as it follows the bylaws and the statute, which for any member meeting you have to have, I think 14 days notice or whatever. As long as you follow those rules, we're here to assist in making sure that that happens. But you're right. Once the votes are in, we have to be able to verify the members that they're in good standing, et cetera, just like we would in the annual meeting.
Jan, sorry. If you'll come up and talk, if anyone, we're having a hard time hearing people on Zoom, so if you'll just come up and talk to the mic.
Sorry about that.
That's great.
This is begging for abuse of the process. It's a very important issue, which should be treated exactly analogous to the process for an annual member meeting. You could say that for the annual meeting, we're going to dispense with paper ballots and just do it electronically. But we don't do that. And so there's a precedent here.
I agree there's a precedent, but again, I haven't looked at the bylaws as far as that part for a while. I'm just telling you as a group, it has to comply with the statute and it has to comply with the bylaws. And what you're saying is also it needs to meet the standard of what we've historically done. It's better if that happens, because we want to verify in writing those things.
I've been around long enough to know that this process of special meetings has been abused in the past. And I'm not going to go into those details. Basically, we want to avoid the fox guarding the hen house here.
My opinion is Deer Springs Ranch organization should participate in holding that meeting with the voting process itself. So counting the votes in a proper fashion, sending out the ballots, and all those things.
I don't know that anybody's opposed to that. I
believe that's why the statute says that a member who's requesting it, such as myself, needs to have 10% of the voting membership backing them, because essentially we are requesting Deer Springs Ranch to spend some of our money to hold a meeting of this nature.
But if you read the statute, and I'm not disagreeing with you necessarily because I think we're willing to, but if you read the statute, it clearly says that the association board has no obligation to participate in any way or assist in any way in holding that member meeting. It's very clear. But with that being said, is anybody opposed to attending the meeting or assisting in counting ballots or making sure that?
Especially if we're trying to do it with the annual meeting time frame with the other votes, it seems like it'd be logistically better for everybody.
Well, according to the statute, it has to be a separate, right? So we can't lump it in with votes for the board and all that stuff. The vote
itself, it'd be a separate vote.
It has to be its own separate entity. So it can't just.
So what I'm saying, just to clarify, what I'm saying is their vote has to be taken and completed prior to the annual meeting. So in the annual meeting, we can announce the results.
Well, and that's, so again, kind of the logistics of it. Do they just go and get a petition and get 151 people to sign the petition? Or back to Dan's point, do they have to, are we sending out a ballot? The ballot then gets returned to Danielle and Danielle's collecting it and counting it?
That's what I would anticipate, is that they produce what they want to see on the ballot, but we send it out and it's returned here because we have to verify the count.
Well, all of the ballots in that scenario, if they're not being returned out, because currently at the annual meeting we collect ballots as well, so that there would not be an option to return the ballot except by mail or I mean.
So, okay. So are you opposed to, because you said it has to be done before the annual meeting. Are you opposed to, because since the annual meeting is a member of, a meeting of the members anyway, and it starts at 11, are you opposed to holding this special meeting for this particular vote at 10? During the same day as the annual meeting, the votes are counted, collected, counted, have to all be in by that time. And then once the annual meeting starts, you will have your results.
I haven't thought about it. Right off the bat, I don't have any necessary, any.
I'd probably say a little bit earlier than 10 because it takes a while to go through all of the ballots.
Well, if the only purpose for it is to...
It's a yes or no ballot. It's going to be...
Basically, yeah.
I'm going to say no, unless it's a lot earlier, because we're validating ballots before we start counting them. Like, we're already doing that in the morning.
I would rather everything be before the meeting, because...
Well,
going on that day.
The only reason I extended it to the meeting is because it was close and for convenience. We may as well just stick with the 60 day requirement that's there. And yes, I have no problem with helping to distribute ballots and collect them in. But I think you're right. We probably should have them in and counted a few days before the meeting so we know what's going on.
Well, do we have an option to have them bring them to that meeting? Is there going to be a physical meeting that they can bring their ballot to?
I'm not opposed to doing it at the August board meeting as well.
Is that soon enough? I mean, does that give you enough time?
It's 30 days. I don't know.
I would rather do that.
I think for the requirements, you have to have 14-day notice to hold the meeting, which...
God.
If you sent that notice out immediately, you'd have that time.
Correct.
So, in essence, just before or just after or during.
Anybody have an objection to having it after the August board meeting to convene the meeting of members? Any objections to that?
I don't have an objection.
Let's do it. And that's not something we have to vote on or anything, or we'll just schedule it. If you're all right with having it after the August meeting, after the August board meeting.
So what are the steps that Jeff needs to take? He needs to draft up a letter to go to the members.
He has to provide notice, and then he has to provide them with a notice of the meeting
and a ballot.
And a ballot.
And so I'm going to get something in the mail, correct?
What's that?
Yes. I'm going to get something in the mail, correct?
Yes.
Right, you're gonna mail them physically and send an email.
Yep, if that's what you're making the request, so you're requesting.
I just want to make sure that we're following the
yes.
rules.
So just
so
like
that it is a valid vote. So there's no weaseling out. If it gets passed, there's no.
I agree.
Pass or fail, that's going to be what it's going to be. At least the members are the ones that get to determine this.
So yeah, absolutely. We will provide a mail out ballot, and we will provide email
notification.
Mail notice and a ballot and email notice as well.
But not an email ballot.
No.
No. The physical ballots
must be returned either to just like
normal. Either brought in the meeting or returned by mail prior to the meeting.
Well, the official election, they can take a picture of the ballot and email it to her and she prints it out. That's a legal.
As long as we have a physical paper ballot, I don't have a problem with that. Do you? Done.
But I also have a question. I would like to know the reasoning you all voted no for removing that rule, and does that change your mind now that there's a penalty for the rules? Like Mike voted no for the penalties because of that rule.
Yeah, we put them in that order. That's why we reversed the order, was because they thought they might influence one way or the other. So.
And I'd like to know the reasoning of voting no for removing the rule.
I can tell you right now, as I have for a year and a half now. So no need to waste time. But yes, I feel strongly we need that protection.
But it just removing the rule doesn't remove the waiver. The waiver would still be there. It's
for all the people
the
who
want to
sign it.
Requiring a yearly signing.
Well,
it makes no sense to me to have a rule that's not enforceable. And if we say, if it's optional for me to sign a waiver, then I'm not going to sign it.
Well, it should be optional anyway, because bottom of the waiver, it says I sign of my own free will, willing, forcing people to sign it is not,
it's not willing.
Okay, well, we're going to go through a meeting. If the majority of the members vote to remove it, then problem solved and we can move forward. If they don't, then we have what we have and we're moving forward.
Yeah. Actually, the problem is not solved, as the board now knows from my attorney.
Now, this isn't going either. Sorry,
guys. Okay. But we will, as a board, be able to focus on some things we've been sidetracked and not accomplished a lot of other things that we should have been working on. I'm done.
Okay. Brief report. Larry, talk about your bypass road.
It's a big hole in the side of the mountain. I thought I was going to have it completed before I left for Alaska, but I'm probably not, because I don't want to open it up until it's 100% and safe and legit. So anyway, it's moving along while I'm gone. There still may be road-based material available if people need it, and you can still call or text my number, and I can make arrangements with Christian or one of my guys to load or haul or move material if you need it. Once that road bypass is complete, that is going to affect the access in and out of the slash limb file that everybody's been using, because it'll be too steep for you to get on and off of that where you currently drive down through, if that makes any sense. For those of you that use it, it makes sense. So you'll now, once that's completed, you will leave Meadow Canyon Road a block or so further north and drive down along the Half Moon Reservoir and then over to the slash pile. Long term, we'll have it, you know, a little bit more gravel in case it's wet, because some of that clay down through there gets a little slippery. I don't know if there's anything else.
All right. Barry, do you have anything else?
Nope, I'm all worn out.
Okay. Mike, you have
anything else? I have nothing else.
Kate.
Yeah, so Larry started last meeting. We were talking about doing a little bit of work up on Crawford. He's now got that completed. So if you guys have driven that, there's a new corner up there that he's widened out, made a little bit better. He's recently touched up the roads up to the cabin, and things are looking pretty good. There's a couple other places I might have him trying to hit before he gets out of here. We got to add to his list before he leaves for Alaska, but we'll see what we can do there. Last time I drove slide, things seemed to be holding up pretty good over there. And most of the areas in the ranch are looking pretty good. I don't know if you're going to, with your curb mechanical problems, are you going to have time to get over to Dan's before you leave, do you think, or?
Probably. Yeah. That's I would be doing that with the dozer and
your dozer's close, but you had to pull it back a little bit. Yeah. So anyway. So we might be able to do a little bit there. Again, as always, if you guys notice especially safety issues really problematic, you know, roads dropping off or culverts washing things out, let me know. We'll try and get those addressed. I try and drive roads as much as I can, but you're going to drive the loads closer to you guys more often than I do. So let me know if you guys notice issues, and we'll try and get those addressed as we can from that perspective.
Another thing real quick, just tiny, tiny changes can make a huge difference. If you notice that somebody has made a rut and now every rainstorm, water starts following that rut down the middle of the road, if you'll stop with a shovel and spend literally 5 minutes and prevent that, you know, kick that water back into the edge, that goes so much further than letting it stay saturating in that spot, because then the next vehicle drives through, makes that rut worse, magnifies the problem, it just amplifies and magnifies and amplifies. And drive the roads like it's a four lane, that means a two track over here and a two track over here, not a two track down the middle.
Yeah, I would say
only if there's money under rocks.
Yeah,
there'll be gone. So only this next month will there be money under rocks, possibly. And I did notice I drove Old Burn Road. That's getting kind of a pretty good bump on it because people have been driving just down the two track now. So that's yeah, definitely where we can.
It forces you to slow down a little bit because you're going to be driving a little closer to the edge, one side or the other. But that helps. Instead of you're driving, everybody's driving regardless of how careful, how well, how speedy. Every driving deteriorates the road to a degree. If you drive correctly, it benefits the road to a degree. So you'll notice that all the gravel is right over here, right in the middle, or right over here, not in those two tracks. So don't drive in those two tracks. Drive over here or drive over here.
And my wife will volunteer to drive with you to tell you if you're driving close enough to the side of the road.
That's from experience?
From experience.
Mine
will be
awful.
You're going to go in the ditch. That's, well, that's what I'm saying. She'll say you're into the ditches. Yeah.
I think we all have that.
I tell her all the time, the first time I go in the ditch, then you can say something.
I've pulled you out. I don't know.
My tractor when I'm plowing snow and it pulls me into the ditch.
Last thing I have to bring up, and I don't think you'll have time before we leave, Larry, but we talked about getting some people trained up on the grader. So I don't want to lose sight of that one. And there's a time that we want to.
And I don't know exactly what's happened. Kurt had taken it up there to Crawford and then brought it back. Did anything ever get done with batteries or not?
I haven't replaced batteries. I've just been waiting for.
Yeah, I hate to spend the money to have it sit there for another.
Well, I can get batteries this next week.
The best thing on that is for somebody to get in it and experiment, but don't experiment on the main thoroughfare.
Well, it'd be best if they take it and experiment. Like on the airstrip, because nobody's using it anymore.
This road along the well field that connects back to the county road would be a good place for somebody to practice a little bit if they wanted to. I fixed the very north end where it comes out on the county road. Ballard was having a hard time going out there with the longer trailers. And do you go out that way when you haul water?
I think Cody does.
Out where?
Out this
along thing. The well field to the county road.
We usually go the other way. The trees are too close. They mirror slap and knock the mirrors in. So,
well, that's.
So, I mean, so suggestion, if while you're out, we get Brad twist his arm, do a couple things to guide some people. Are you, is that a recommendation or are we?
Yeah. Anybody has time and wants to volunteer, Brent will lift you up in the backhoe and go along and you can chainsaw off limbs.
Yeah. Right in the bucket.
Free bucket.
Yeah, we'll look at something from there. Thanks, Clay. That's all I've got.
Okay. Dirk, you have anything else?
So I can head up to about 17, 18 feet off the ground.
No, I don't have anything else, Brent. Thank you.
Dan, do you have anything?
He was on mute last time he tried to talk, and Dirk had to keep it.
Tell him no, Ben said.
Okay, well, I'm pretty happy with that. Members, you got a couple of minutes each.
I've got a couple of questions. First of all, on the penalty, since the waiver went out this year, and not everyone has signed. When do you look at starting to send out notices for the penalty?
His motion said it would take effect at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, because it's been kind of in flux and it may be undone, then my rule change would take effect January 1st, so you'll get notice if you haven't signed it by March of next year, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. I think you already clarified in an email that if you had joint ownership, everybody that was a joint owner had to sign for a lot to be considered.
The rule as it's written says each lot owner. So if your name's on title, and then we have LLCs and we have trusts, then we're going to follow the rule as it was adopted last year, yes.
Okay. And to me, it seems like the option to pay additional money for insurance if you don't sign has gone away. That
after looking into that and debating it and discussing it back and forth, practically speaking, it was just impossible to make that work. Okay. And so I backed off of that with the last iteration, saying, look, it was kind of a compromise, and it didn't really go very far, and it added more questions than it did answers. So.
And I know it's good.
Oh, sorry.
So to me, it looks like everyone is going to have to sign if you are here on Deer Springs, because if you don't sign the first year, it's going to be 100, and there's 200, and eventually you're going to get to the max, which is 6,000 if it's 500 per month, if you don't sign each year. So eventually everyone's going to have to sign or sell their property or move. Is that, do you see it the same way that?
Yeah, if the rule stays in place and people just absolutely refuse to sign, then yes, that's the end result.
Okay. That's it.
I don't see any other member comments.
I'd like to give public praise to Larry Clarkson for cleaning up that slash file, sir. Thank you. Must take.
I don't know where all that stuff. I don't know where all that stuff's coming. Is that all coming from you?
All from me. I'm totally responsible. But thank you for cleaning it up. Because a month ago when I was here, I'm like, holy cow. But it had to have taken you all day with the front loader.
It took 2 hours.
That's it.
2 hours with the big track hole, but it was, when I went over that, I thought, wow. Yeah.
Well, thank you, sir.
Yeah.
There's the culprit.
Well, there was a lot of, it wasn't just him. I know that for a fact, but there was a lot, I was surprised.
Yeah, but thank you. You graded it out flat. The only problem is hopefully somebody doesn't drive in that ravine.
In the past, I've left a little bit up thinking I don't want somebody to back off. Right. But it was so built up, and I thought, if I'm gone for a couple of months and they do that again, it'll be clear up through the field. So I pushed it all off and then got down in there.
Yeah, I think people just have to be smart, you know. I mean,
I'm going to leave that up to their discretion if they fall in.
Well, they won't go too far on the first
quarter. Yeah, they only get one. Fall so far.
Yeah.
So thank you, Larry.
What are they doing on the road out here? It looks like they
initially, I thought, I was excited. I thought, awesome, they're straightening the road. They're going to make it nice. It's just to build a fence.
You're kidding.
That's it. Yeah.
But is this a monument we had years ago when they were going to straighten it out and BLM
threw a fit and said, you can't because you'll hurt a sagebrush or a tree, and now they clear cut it.
Yeah.
I, in my opinion, and I may be totally wrong, I think because of the big fire out there last year, it's going to grow back a lot of grass. That's going to be a lot of cow feed, and I think somebody's going to be running cows out there that they haven't bothered with in the past because it was just trees. So no reason to spend the money to fence and try to get a cattle grazing on your permit with trees. Cows don't eat trees. Fun fact. So now that there's going to be a lot of potential regrowth of forage, I think they've decided, hey, it's worth the time to go ahead and fence all that.
Do you think the BLM fenced it, or do you think it's the leafy?
It's a. I think it's a permittee.
Permittee that's gotten permission to fence it in. It's interesting they let the permittee knock down that many trees, but
well, it's kind of.
So they're going to come in and get rid of trees anyway, too. So it's like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Speaking of trees, people are dumping complete trees into the slash pit. They could buck those up, and I don't want the opinion, but they could buck those junipers up
and bring the juniper rounds down here so we could have firewood for the cabins. But they're throwing complete trees into the slash
pit. If I'd have had my smaller machine with the thumb, I probably would have grabbed a dozen different pieces and stuck them off to the side. But I didn't want to spend the whole day sorting material, and so I just pushed it all down in. And
well, I'm just saying it'd be preemptive, and then you wouldn't even have to worry about that.
Yeah, there's a lot of usable firewood if somebody burns firewood.
So are we to the point where we just covered most of it up at this point, or are we still planning on burning?
I still think it's if we can get a decent snow, we ought to light it on fire.
It's going to burn for a long time, but I'm looking forward to a little bit of snow, and we can have a really nice fire.
Yeah, it'll burn for a week and a half, 2 weeks
at least. So, any other member stuff?
I want to thank the board for all your hard work.
Thanks.
The North Gate is unlocked. We've had a few conflicting stories, but I again verified at the Sheriff's Department yesterday that, no, it's open and travel's restored clear to Highway 12, and so I don't know why Color Country was...
Well, they transferred me three times until I got to the France Canyon Fire Dispatcher, and I asked her, and apparently she didn't bother to even get on the radio and talk to the incident commander and say, hey, is the road still closed? She just said, yes, it's closed. So,
like I told you, the day before, I had noticed two fire crew trucks from Cedar Mountain Fire up through there. They took a porta potty up and set it up in the tall pines.
I saw them.
Was that them? I thought that was the hand crew that was working on the fire mitigation.
They might be part of the hand crew.
Oh, okay.
Because they've done a lot of hand trimming and stacked up right there in the Ponderosa Grove.
Right.
And that's where they put the porta potty. So it might have been them.
Yeah, I thought they had done that and they completed and they brought the porta potty in just for that.
Yeah. So I have heard from people that have gone up there that if you do go up there, all the roads to the west are still closed, but the main road going through
The North Fork Road, main road.
Whatever it is, 71.
Yeah, it's called the North Fork Road.
So that road is going through is clear, but everything to the west is still kind of closed. And the fire damage didn't seem as apparent for the road as you would think.
Just while we're talking about fire, you know, last year we ended up burning 15,000, 20,000 acres. Probably very, very beneficial burn, but Deer Springs was lucky because it started close and burned away. This year we've burnt 35,000 acres.
It started close and burned away.
Pretty beneficial, very little long-term or detrimental damage. But, again, we're lucky. One of these times, it's not going to start close and burn away. It's going to start away and burn close or through. And so the limb and trim, the clearing and cleaning, if you have stuff all close up, there's nothing you can do except
put it in the splash pit.
It's all but the crying.
You want us to throw up that slash pit again, don't you?
Yeah, you can. I'd rather it be in the slash pit and you have a cabin or a camper than listen to you whine that you don't have a cabin or a camper. But I could go either way.
I love fire just how it is, but
yeah,
I'm happy. Okay, next meeting.
August 9th.
Same channel?
Yes, same time.
I will be.
Larry won't be here. And anyway.
One last thing, Danielle's probably going to kill me. If there are any nominations for the board, I think 10 p.m. tonight was the deadline to get those in. So you should have got a notice with this thing to be able to put. So list somebody down as another board member. We got three people that are going off this year, so.
All right. I move we adjourn.
Second.
Make the motion.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? There you go.